Hello and welcome to a week 13 edition of the rest of season top 150 rankings show. My name is Adam Levitan, as always joined by Mark Dankenbring and Mike Leone as we approach the NFL fantasy football playoffs. Leone, good morning.
Good morning. I'm repping some gear.
Yeah. You know, a return to moderacy, a return to the center, if you will. It's enough. It's enough with the extreme. Silva Levitan 2024. Mark, how's it going?
Going great. Yeah, I'm also repping some new ETR hoodies. We got champion hoodies, which are very comfortable and warm. So loving that. And nice to be back with you guys after being off last week for Thanksgiving.
Yes, hope everybody had a Thanksgiving. So we are aware that most of you have had the trade deadline pass in your league. We're going to try to focus this show a little bit more on what we think about maybe some fringy players, some stashes, and overall optimization. Before we get into it here today, have to remind everyone the show is indeed brought to you by our friends at Underdog Fantasy. Promo code ETR at Underdog Fantasy will get you $100 up to $100 sign up bonus. We will have rankings up later tonight, Wednesday night, for the Battle Royale format. We also have Pick'em table, our projections versus their lines. That comes out on Saturday. Battle Royale stuff seems really, really good and fun. Snake drafts, 1 week format. All right. I think a big question a lot of people have is what should your rosters be looking like going into the playoffs? And I do think there are significant changes from the way we would like to build our lineups for season long at the beginning of the year. For me, I think handcuffing is like each week that goes by makes it more and more important to me. I also like rostering anyone that's one injury away from being, you know, like a top 20 play on the week. If any of those guys are out there, I like to have them on my bench. Other things that I've seen is people get these 2-for-1 trade offers where they're giving two and getting one. I always like to be getting the one anyways, but especially this time of year when you want the absolute stone cold difference maker in your lineup and two kind of middling meh guys, isn't it? You want to have slate breakers there for the playoffs. Start with you, Leone. How do you think about generally optimizing rosters for the fantasy football playoffs?
Yeah, even just like zooming out and looking at how we thought about things at the beginning of the season, you know, a lot of times we're telling people not to worry about optimizing their starting lineup to start the season. You mentioned handcuffing. We're not so much worried about handcuffing. There's so much chaos that occurs over the course of the season that we just want max upside, kind of let the chips fall where they may and figure it out towards the end of the season. But like you said, we're at the end of the season now. There's a lot less room for this chaos. If you're in the playoff hunt, it is now all about optimizing your starting lineup to an extent. You don't want to assume there's going to be no injuries. You know, on any given week, there can be an injury and you still want a fill-in. But if you have a pretty solid starting lineup, you know, someone asked me, they didn't have a ton of bench depth, but they said, should I trade Garrett Wilson and
Mike Evans? Yeah.
Mike Evans for Tyreek Hill. And they had Garrett Wilson on their bench. And I'm like, absolutely. You have to make the upgrade and sort of gamble on the health side of things, you know, just get that max upside. And I am, you said, more willing to handcuff my own running back at this point, especially if my team's in really good shape, because I kind of already hit the upside I wanted to hit. And now it's all about securing that. There's also some types of backs that, you know, with the trade deadline passed, I don't know if it matters quite as much, but someone like James Conner, I value a lot more, where I'm less worried about injury stuff hitting him. I'm less worried about the skill side of things like I was at the beginning of the season. Now I'm just worried about, does he have the role, you know, week in and week out to give me the points that I want? And he does. So he's a good example of the type of running back that, you know, I value much more now than relative to the beginning of the year.
I mean, I know everybody hates Samaje Perine. I don't know why, but like, to me, if you had Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine was out there before, like, you were making a mistake by not having Samaje Perine on your roster. I know there's different arguments out there about handcuffing. To me, when a guy is going to be a smash, if the starter goes down, like Samaje Perine certainly is, or at least a relative smash relative to what else is out there at the running back position. I mean, I see absolutely no downside whatsoever in carrying guys like Perine before the Mixon injury. Now it's obviously too late. Mark, any more comments here on optimizing rosters for the playoffs?
Essentially just that I'm trying to stash as many handcuff RBs as possible. As you mentioned, you know, you want the guys that are kind of top 20 plays at their position. And that pretty much boils down to running back, right? You know, we don't have too many wide receivers that will step into a much larger role just with one injury. So, you know, running backs, I'm more willing to stash, you know, kind of a guy that doesn't have as much of a weekly role right now, but, you know, say someone like Sky Moore, we've been holding, hoping he's going to break out. And it kind of seems like that might not happen. You know, I'd be willing to cut him for more of just a running back stash And my team specifically, I feel like I'm stronger at the wide receiver position. So, you know, if I'm four or five deep at wide receiver and can feel confident starting three to four every week, like I'll just load up the rest of my bench with running backs.
Yeah. And again, you know, the reason that there aren't really wide receiver handcuffs is because wide receiver fantasy points are derived from talent, whereas most running back fantasy points are derived from opportunity. I did want to make one more macro point here, Leone. The fab stuff, I'm far from like a fab expert. I think, and by fab, I mean for the guys who are those guys who play in leagues where you get $1,000 of free agent money to start and you bid on guys, right? There's all kinds of different strategies that you can employ here. I think a popular kind of saying now is if you're going to bid on someone, you might as well just YOLO it all in. I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that for fully, but like we have a bunch of guys this week that are kind of middling on waivers. And so I'll bring up guys like Zonovan Knight, Tyrion Davis Price, Jelani Woods, Jamichael Hasty, Daryl Henderson. Are we really supposed to be emptying the clip on our fab money here now? Leone, how do you think about waivers and fab at this point of the season?
Yeah, I mean, some of it depends what kind of league you're in. I'm in some, you know, local leagues with shorter benches where there's a decent amount of contingent running backs out there. And in that case, I'm probably not emptying the clip on Tyrion Davis Price, Zonovan Knight. Like, I think they're good contingency backs. They should be on all rosters and pretty much all formats. But if you're in like a regular 12-team league with like 5-6 person benches, there's probably some other ones out there that you don't have to go nuts on. Now, if you're playing in like FFPC, NFFC, these 10 bench style leagues or 14 team leagues, 7-person bench leagues where the wire's a bit thinner. I mean, I've 4 or 5 weeks in a row now, I'm just desperate to pick up anyone in those types of formats. You know, I mentioned to Mark before the show about Zamir White being on the back end of our top 150 because he got dropped in one league. And I was like actually excited because there's like not even guys that are an injury away. You mentioned those guys. So that's the type of league where it's getting pretty close to the end of the season where I'd be tempted to spend a lot. Tyrion Davis Price is definitely my favorite of the bunch. You know, he had that athletic profile we were targeting in the beginning of the season. I think he's ahead of Jordan Mason. It's tough to tell because Mason's been active because he plays special teams. And he cleaned up last game when Elijah Mitchell got hurt and CMC wasn't 100% at the very end there. I think going into the week with Tyrion Davis Price having to be active, that he'll be ahead of Jordan Mason. So I like that upside a bit more.
Okay. Yeah. We have here Tyrion Davis Price here at the very, very back end, 142nd overall in the rankings. Again, Eli Mitchell will be out 6 to 8 weeks. Christian McCaffrey dealing with a knee irritation. And this is the kind of spot where, like, I don't know if necessarily, like Leone said, if it's going to be TDP or Jordan Mason or some mix of both, but I definitely think it's worth taking shots. And I do think Tyrion Davis Price has the better profile. The other one I wanted to talk about, Mark, was the Jets situation. So, you know, really surprising that they scratched James Robinson for this game. Talked about on the solo pod, you know, the plan was clearly not, oh, we're going to scratch James Robinson and now we're going to give Michael Carter 25 carries. You know, that was not the plan. They had a plan. Obviously, they knew they were scratching James Robinson. And I think the plan might have just been, hey, we want to see Zonovan Knight. We actually think he's better than James Robinson. So I actually like adding Zonovan Knight here. Not only do the Jets tell us they think he's better than James Robinson, but also Michael Carter now picked up an ankle injury. We'll see what happens there. So I actually like kind of being aggressive on Zonovan. I get that the offensive environment isn't as good as San Francisco. Any thoughts on Zonovan versus San Francisco guys, Mark, and anything else on the Jets stuff?
Yeah, I think Zonovan right now, as you mentioned, is going to play over James Robinson. If Michael Carter does miss this week, I would guess that James Robinson is activated and does get a few carries and excuse me. And then, you know, Ty Johnson's still there. So I think it's going to be a three-way running back by committee, kind of regardless of who's in and out, which is, you know, not great for upside. But I do think this Jets offense is, you know, has a much higher upside with Mike White in there than Zach Wilson, which is pretty crazy to say. I do think, you know, I'd kind of rather stash TDP just for the upside. If you're just purely playing for the playoffs, you know, if you need a running back to start in the next couple of weeks, I think Zonovan Knight is probably like the better option for that. If you're trying to get, you know, 7 to 10 points or something along those lines. But certainly I'm adding Zonovan where he's available. Not exactly going all in because, you know, I think if you're waiting around for the playoffs, I do think there's something to saving kind of that top waiver priority or some of your fab in case something opens up in the playoffs and you can go all in on that at that point. yeah, I think he's certainly worth an add and, you know, just kind of falls into the category of upside running back. But I don't think, you know, it'll really be anything less than a two-way running back by committee there.
One thing about the fab stuff is that not everybody's going to use it, right? Like there's a lot of people who are checked out, whose team is dead. When you're looking at how much fab your opponents have, be sure you make sure that they're actually like active and going to make a bid before you worry about them. I'm sure a lot of contending teams have already blown a lot of their fab. Leona, you have something to add there on the Jets stuff?
Just for the fab stuff, if you're playing in an NFFC league and maybe some of the FFPC, you got to check the exact rules of your league, but sometimes they lock when the playoffs start. You know, they do those points chase for the playoffs. So I know NFFC, I think there's this week and the next week set of fab and that's it. So just, you know, if you're saving your money, just make sure how many weeks are left because you want to, again, optimize your team next week for NFFC. If you make the playoffs, you know, you get your backup quarterback on your bench. You're not going to be able to make moves in season. Last thing you want to do is just kind of assume you're fine and then just be totally dead just because you overlooked something, didn't realize fab ended.
Three more running back stashes to consider here. I want to get your take on Leone. I have Zamir White, Josh Jacobs' calf thing doesn't sound great. He's supposed to get around the clock treatment, quote unquote, all this week on his calf to see if he can play this week. I do expect he'll be able to play, but I do think Zamir is at least interesting. The Jacksonville situation, I know they say Travis Etienne's going to be fine. Foot injury scares me on this guy coming off of a Liz Frank. And also Melvin Gordon signed with the Broncos practice squad. I don't think it's crazy to think that Melvin Gordon can end up having a role
the
here.
Chiefs,
The Chiefs. Yeah. What do you think about stashing Melvin, Zamir, Jacksonville guys? By Jacksonville guys, I mean Hasty, who I thought actually played pretty well on Sunday, or Daryl Henderson, who they submitted a waiver claim for.
I mean, every time I give up on a guy and drop him like Melvin Gordon, they sign with the Chiefs and then I can't get him back the next week. It happened with Kadarius Toney at the beginning of the year, but I think all those guys are fine stashes. I mean, I could definitely see Melvin working his way up. You know, he's kind of more that like all around back. You know, right now they've got McKinnon as the pure pass catcher. They've got Pacheco as the grinder. And then Ronald Jones hasn't been active all year until recently. So he could work his way up. I think with Zamir White, you're not going to get the full workhorse upside that you get with Josh Jacobs. But again, some of the wire is so thin that even him as a two down back with the goal line work would be pretty valuable for Las Vegas. Another guy that wasn't mentioned that I've been stashing everywhere is Keontae Ingram. You know, I mentioned I do like James Conner, but with Eno Benjamin gone, it's pretty much just Keontae Ingram behind him. He showed some flashes when he got some opportunities when Conner was out. He's the type of back that, you know, in some of the deeper leagues, there just aren't guys that are one injury away. I would count him as one injury away.
All right, so we're optimizing our starting lineup for the playoffs. We're willing to give up death. We want to be handcuffing more. We want to be stashing guys who are one injury away at the running back position. I think we've covered all that. The last step, I think, to getting ready for the playoffs is defensive streamers, Mark. And one that I had noted was the Chiefs. Now, they get the Bengals this week, so it's possible that people drop them or whatever. After they play the Bengals this week, the Chiefs play Denver, the worst offense in the last, like, 20 years. Houston, which is total train wreck, Seattle, okay, and then Denver again. I think if the Chiefs get dropped this week, I would be aggressive in adding them. Mark, any other defenses you like stashing here for the playoff run? Assuming you have a team that's pretty likely to make the playoffs, I do think it's worth starting to think about your defensive streamers.
Yeah, I think the Panthers are somewhat interesting here. They get Pittsburgh in the first round of the playoffs and then Detroit. So two, you know, solid matchups there. And then the Vikings as well are somewhat interesting. They get the Colts in week 15 and then the Giants in week 16. And obviously, we've seen, you know, kind of what Matt Ryan has devolved into, and the Vikings' strength is on the defensive line. So I think that those are decent matchups and probably two defenses that should be available for you. The Ravens have a great schedule as well, but I'm imagining they're going to be owned in most leagues, so not necessarily the best stash. So I kind of lean towards the Panthers, Vikings, and then, yeah, I love your call on the Chiefs. I would imagine, you know, a lot of teams drop them going up against the Bengals this week, but they were highly owned against the Rams last week. So, you know, hopefully they get dropped again.
Yep. Okay. One last thing I wanted to mention is the teams that are candidates to rest. We have a long history of Andy Reid resting players when it doesn't matter. We'll see this year. They're 9-2. The Dolphins are on their heels. The Bills are on their heels. We'll see. I also think the Eagles are candidates to rest people in week 17 and 18, but we'll see. A lot of coaches don't like to do it in the second to last week. They only do it in the last week. So we'll see there.
We also only get one team now, you know, with the bye in each conference, yep. which makes it, you know, with teams only one game behind, as good as Philly's doing, Minnesota, I think it's only one game behind there. So it helps a little bit to ease the rest concerns.
All right. One of the stories of this week, Mark, is the return of Deshaun Watson to the Browns. You know, I don't want to say I'm lower than most people on Deshaun Watson's return. I just think the gap to go isn't as wide as I thought it would be. In other words, Jacoby Brissett has played so well. And I think maybe you guys disagree. I think Jacoby Brissett has played really well and been efficient for the offense. Is it really going to be like this mind-blowing explosion from the Browns now that they have Deshaun Watson? Maybe. I mean, clearly Deshaun Watson's better than Jacoby Brissett, but it's not like Jacoby Brissett was playing awful. It's not like they're going from freaking Sam Darnold to Deshaun Watson. Jacoby was actually playing pretty well. Amari Cooper was fantasy's number 12 wide receiver. Nick Chubb is having an awesome year too. So I don't know. I think they'll be better. I don't think it's going to be like some wild explosion, but I'm interested to hear other opinions. What do you think about all the Browns stuff now that Deshaun Watson is back in the saddle?
Yeah, I think it raises their ceiling a little bit, but you mentioned their floor has been really good with Jacoby, and we've seen, you know, spike games out of Amari and DPJ. And the nice thing there is everything has been so concentrated between those two at receiver, and then, you know, Njoku is working his way back. So I think all three of those guys are confidently startable and just have a little more upside with Deshaun Watson and his playmaking ability, able to push the ball downfield, I think, a little better than Jacoby. So, you know, I think it just raises the ceiling of them a bit, but I agree, you know, just Jacoby has, I think, outperformed expectations. He's top 10 quarterback in terms of, you know, PFF grades on the season. So he's certainly done a great job with that offense. They've been efficient. You know, so I think kind of coming into the year, we thought Amari Cooper might be a wide receiver three or four, you know, most of the year, and then could jump up into the wide receiver one range with Watson. But, you know, he's already at that range. So I really don't know how much vertical movement there is for him there, but certainly I think a little more confident just in their overall offense.
Yeah. If I'm making the pro Watson case, it's that, you know, his last year he led the NFL in yards per attempt at 8.9, and Brissett has only thrown, you know, 12 touchdowns in 11 games. We expect Watson to be more like 2 touchdowns per game. So I definitely agree with you guys that the gap's not as wide as we thought it would be, but I don't want to underrate, you know, the ceiling. If Watson is able to come in here and play as well as he's played in the past, that's no guarantee. But if he does, I think the ceiling could bump up in a pretty meaningful way, despite how well Jacoby played.
Yeah. And by the way, they're at the Texans this week. So like Deshaun's going to come in and freaking shred, and everybody's gonna be like, oh, see, Jacoby sucks. Like Jacoby was going to shred the Texans also, guys. So let's not go nuts. But yeah, obviously an incredible spot for Deshaun Watson come back for a revenge game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Few other quick things to talk about here. I know it's not really that relevant to people's actual teams. I do think who you would take number one overall right now is at least an interesting debate to have quickly. We tweeted the gap between Kelce and everyone else. I'm actually tempted to say that Travis Kelce is actually the number one overall pick right now, because like you start every week with like a 10-point lead on everyone else, essentially. And, you know, obviously, like if you have Kelce, the rest of your team is weaker in theory, but man, there's so many round three, round four. I mean, hell, the best teams obviously right now are the teams that started with Kelce and then got Josh Jacobs. I mean, if you did that, you know, like you're printing. So I don't know, Mark, we have Eckler one. I know we debated this a little bit. I don't hate, it would be any of these guys. Honestly, any of the top five, I think you can make case for Eckler, Tyreek Hill, Kelce, Diggs, Justin Jefferson. What do you think, Mark? We have Eckler number one. How close are all these guys?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, next year I want to institute some tiers into these rankings, because I do think that top five is just an elite tier, you know, and if you're going in every week with those guys, like they can all drop 30 balls and just give you a massive advantage. So, you know, I do think positionally, obviously Kelce gives you the biggest advantage over your league mates. I do think the way Eckler is being used in that offense is just so unbelievable, especially in PPR. I mean, just his pass catching floor is incredible. So, and then Tyreek, you know, just in that offense, it's been a while since I feel like we've seen the Dolphins offense push for a full game. So I think the Tyreek ceiling, people have forgotten about it a little bit. So, you know, I think any three of those guys, you're just, I mean, as you said, windmilling at home, if you have them on your team.
Tyreek, by the way, is such, I would have no problem with Tyreek at number one overall. You know, 49ers this week, then Chargers, Bills, Packers, Patriots, Jets to end the year.
I just gotta say, when Travis Kelce inevitably has a down year, you're not allowed to blame the age model.
Well, what else would it be? I mean, the guy's unstoppable. What else would it be?
Age model every year until it happens, though.
Well, that's how the age model works. Eventually, it hits. That's you just keep saying it. Eventually, it hits. There's certainly outliers on the age model. I mean, not many, but Tom Brady obviously shoved it down my throat a lot on the age model, and Kelce for sure. And yeah, Justin Jefferson. There's no doubt in the conversation.
I will say, I don't want to say like Kelce's running hot because he's so good and Mahomes is so good and that scheme, you know, just makes things so efficient. But he and Justin Jefferson lead the NFL with 15 targets inside the 10-yard line. Kelce has turned those 15 targets into 8 touchdowns, and Justin Jefferson only has 3 touchdowns on his 15 targets. So, you know, I think he is running a little hot for sure. And we could see even some bigger spike games out of Jefferson if he converts some more of those into touchdowns.
Leone, I wanted to bring up the Jets stuff because I think it's one of the biggest changing situations. In other words, we get a massive change at quarterback and it's like, oh, it's not going to be that big a deal. It's just they're going to Mike White, whatever. It's a massive deal. I mean, they changed the way they call plays. And I know it's hard for us to kind of capture all that. But when they've had Flacco in there, and I know Flacco's PROE wasn't great, but when they had Mike White in there last year, to me, they're clearly more willing to drop it back. I mean, you know, they threw the ball a bunch more times in the first half with this game against the Bears, in the pouring freaking rain against the freaking Bears. They've had more attempts in the first half of the game than Zach Wilson had in most games all year. And so how are we handling on the back end the Jets stuff in terms of their play calling and how Mike White affects things?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely encouraging given what the spread was in this game, the matchups, the weather going in, to see them come out and sling it was a pretty big surprise. And you know, I kind of thought maybe some of the Mike White stuff from last year was overrated, but it looks like it may not be. And I think if you're just looking at this game overall, you might not catch it because it did finally rain a ton in this game in the second half and they had a huge lead and they nursed it. So their final like pass rate of expectation was negative. But if you just looked at the first half, they clearly came out with a high, you know, pass rate over expectation, a little bit more, shorter ADOT stuff, but that's going to rack up completions. And, you know, once again, he targeted the running back position at a high rate. So I think you're really excited if you own Garrett Wilson to have Mike White. I think the ceiling was always there because he could just be like a top 10, wide receiver in terms of talent already, but the floor was shaky because of Zach Wilson. Now I think your floor is much more elevated where even if Mike White isn't good, he'll be bad in a way that still results in like catch volume for the team. Whereas Zach Wilson was bad in a way where the team just like completely hit him. And he just couldn't complete a pass. We saw that New England game. So yeah, I feel much better about Wilson being startable week to week right now. I have him on a team that's not that great. And I think we actually benched him for Treylon Burks last week. But now he's like pretty firmly in our starting lineup going forward.
Don't talk to me about Treylon Burks versus Garrett Wilson. I can't. I really don't normally tilt like at all. Like when Garrett Wilson caught the second touchdown, I actually like slammed my hand against my desk. And I normally never, ever do that. That was just, I can't even start.
Stoicism has no match for bad weather adjustments.
Yeah.
I do want to bring up, you know, we said there aren't too many wide receiver handcuffs, but I think Elijah Moore is actually kind of interesting as a bench stash going into the playoffs, because if Garrett Wilson or Corey Davis go down, I think we could see Elijah's routes spike. And it seems like things have calmed down there a little bit and we know how talented he is. So, you know, kind of just with the ebb and flow of the season, I think Elijah Moore could in certain scenarios become valuable in the playoffs.
I did want to highlight the DJ Moore stuff. It's probably irrelevant because most people who have DJ Moore are probably dead by now. I actually do have some live best ball teams though that have DJ Moore, and so it's so clear to me that and really everyone that Sam Darnold is such a massive upgrade. We have DJ Moore up to 56th overall in the rankings now. One of the last things I wanted to ask about, Mark, is the Dallas stuff. You know, I thought that the horse had left the barn. I don't even know if that's an expression, but I thought the horse had left the barn. And it did still. I mean, on Thanksgiving, Pollard outsnapped him. Pollard had more opportunities. But Pollard had fewer routes run than Zeke. And Zeke actually played a pretty good game. It's going to give Jerry the Viagra he needs to force more Zeke, I think. So we adjusted the rankings a decent amount here. We got Pollard 49th overall, Zeke 69th overall going forward. Mark, how would you think about it if you had Zeke on a season-long roster? And Pollard, I think you have to start regardless, but I would feel better about starting Zeke now if I had him, which, of course, I don't because I'm not a sick, sick fish. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, death taxes and fantasy analysts clamoring for more Tony Pollard. You know, it just is what it is at this point. Like, the gap got closer to 50-50 on Thanksgiving. I think the most disappointing thing for Pollard is he only ran 33% of the routes, which is, you know, a shame because it looks like Zeke is still going to continue to get most of the work inside the five and inside the 10. And obviously that leads to more touchdowns. So you're going to need the big plays from Pollard. I think both are low end RB2s at this point, and you kind of have to start them in most leagues and, you know, just hope the touchdown variance goes your way. And again, with Pollard, hope that he, you know, gets more involved in the passing game moving forward. So I think, you know, at this point, they're both startable. The ceiling is capped a bit just because they are splitting work. But, you know, at this point, at the state of the running back position, I think they're both, you know, pretty confident starts.
I just wanted to give before we close up here, a shout to Leone, two of the more valuable players down the stretch here in season long and best ball are guys that Leone wanted us to be high on. And we were not, and we berated him and shamed him on Treylon Burks and Kenneth Walker until we moved them down the rankings in the preseason. And just a good reminder that I think there's, you know, it can go wrong, right? Like, we were high on James Cook too. Like, it can go wrong, but thinking about rookies who are talented and letting the chips eventually fall is one way to look at it. I think I would have been in on Kenneth Walker if I had just had a better read on Seattle. Like, I thought Seattle was going to be stone cold dead to score touchdowns. Like, I thought Seattle was going to be Denver. Right. And so I don't feel as bad about the Kenneth Walker one because, like, that was a macro thing with Seattle. I think I get that was baked into the price. The Treylon one, though, clearly they needed him clearly late in the year. I always thought that he'd eventually play and play a ton, but he's certainly been pretty valuable down the stretch. The other hand, though, Leone there and Rashad White, too. Guys like that, we were high on. James Cook, there's going to be a lot of whiffs, like, on James Cook and guys like this. But
Sky Moore.
The ones that hit, though, like Christian Watson, Rashad White, Treylon, Kenneth Walker, like, it's so valuable. So I don't know, Leone, any lessons for next year?
Not really. I mean, honestly, my lessons less about those upside guys that I think we should be targeting late and more about, you know, the dropping values that just project well and people start sort of the upside-only arguments a little bit too early in their draft, you know. Treylon Burks and Kenneth Walker is kind of like you get to a point and like all you care about is their ceiling. You don't really care about the potential to whiff, but there were guys, Theo from like Goat District, I think he does his stuff, had a tweet that I retweeted, but like some of the most valuable players this year, Josh Jacobs, Miles Sanders, Tyler Lockett. There was somebody else in there that was just, yeah. Oh, Amari Cooper, like the guys nobody wanted to take that projected pretty well. And we don't want to overrate projectable day one volume, but there comes a point where they're just like a worthwhile bet where sometimes upside hits simply on players who project for the most points that are available, you know, remaining in your draft, just having a season that we couldn't fathom, like just hitting like their 90th percentile outcome on the range based on those projected points. So just being more open to that. And if we wanted to get real meta, I think the running back position changed a lot this year. We see a little bit less huge workhorse upside at the very top. We also have at the bottom less valuable, like obvious pass catchers to pick up, like the Nyheim Hines, JD McKissick types, which makes guys like Miles Sanders, who maybe score like 14 points per game. You know, in the past, those guys were a little bit overvalued based on their per game rank, because they weren't matching the ceiling up top and they were replaceable down low. And now that it's being kind of squeezed in from both sides, you're realizing that value a little bit more on a lot of teams.
Okay. All right. We've said it all. Let's get to everybody's favorite portion of the program. The one move to make. We'll still include buy and sells in here, even though I know the trade deadline has passed for people. I still think it's interesting if we want to do a buy or sell in the trade market or anything else. One move to make to close it out. Mark, I'll give you the floor.
Cool. I'm going to go with a player we talked about a bit here, and it's to add Tyrion Davis Price. So, you know, the 49ers are on a pretty solid trajectory to make the playoffs at this point. Eli Mitchell just went down for, it looks like, the rest of the regular season. CMC dealing with this knee injury. And, you know, even if he plays, like he could get limited further or even, you know, taken out of some games down the stretch. And in the playoffs, the 49ers face Seattle, Washington, and Las Vegas, who have both, you know, have all been pretty susceptible to running back points. So I think just down the stretch here, we could get TDP rising. And, you know, as we mentioned, all these running back stashes are, you know, high upside plays going into the playoffs. And I think TDP is at the top of that list.
All right. I like it. TDP. Leone, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, one defense that we didn't mention, I mean, it's kind of boring to do a defense, but the Pittsburgh Steelers defense has been available in a lot of my leagues. I think with Watt back, that defense is undervalued overall. And in the playoffs, they're going to get the Carolina Panthers. They're going to get Lamar and the Ravens, which isn't a great matchup. I don't think it's a terrible matchup either. And then they also are going to get Las Vegas at home in Pittsburgh. So I think they're a pretty good add down the stretch if you've been streaming defenses all year and want one to just lock in at this point in time.
All right. Steelers defense. I like it. We got a question from Hugh Direction, a very mature name there, sir. He says, Dank, would you add TDP over Damian Harris? I think there's really a question about Damian Harris's health. It doesn't look good to me on Damian Harris' health. Already been ruled out, I think, or expected to be ruled out for Thursday. But Mark, what do you think about TDP versus Damian Harris in season long?
I would say yes to do that. It seems like Damian Harris is going to miss some time. And even when he comes back, you know, his role, I don't think is all that valuable. So we're just playing for the upside. You know, I'd rather have TDP there. And that's kind of a move. Like if you're locked into the playoffs in the next couple of weeks, don't really matter. Damian Harris is someone I would drop and just take a, you know, a flag or a flyer on a handcuff running back. And hopefully that, you know, starter goes down in the next couple of weeks and then you're kind of set up for the playoffs. So yeah, I think that's a good question and definitely a move I would make.
All right. My move to make, well, I'll give two because I'm a generous guy. First one, I already talked about Chiefs defense. If they get dropped this week, please add the Chiefs defense. I think that makes sense for sure based on schedule, based on what they can do with their pass rush once they get up in games, like when they're up 20 to nothing or whatever on Russ Wilson. I mean, you know, it's going to be ugly. Second one, I'm going to empty the clip on Zonovan Knight. I know maybe there's some disagreements. Sound like Mark maybe disagreed. I'm just going to empty the clip on Zonovan in leagues where like it's pretty deep and there's not that many running back opportunities. You know, I think I have like 350 or 400 bucks out of the 1,000 left in one league where Zonovan is available. And I think I'm just going to YOLO it in because I think the intention to start the game against the Bears was Zonovan was going to play a lot in the first half. Opportunities were Michael Carter 8, Zonovan 5, Ty Johnson 1. If those ratios stick going forward, even if Michael Carter's healthy, you can still start Zonovan. I think plays reasonably in the pass game and it seems like he has some good pop in the run game as well. So emptying the clip on Zonovan Knight is going to be my move. All right. That is going to do it for this rest of season top 150 show. If you have specific questions about who we like better for the rest of the season, feel free to consult our top 150. You can access it with DraftKit Pro or with an in-season subscription. We do have a goal of 30,000 YouTube subscribers before the end of the year. I forget to inform everyone, we're not pacing well. It doesn't look like we're going to make it. We need your help. Hit the subscribe button. Helps us out a lot. Maybe we won't have to do any more ass clown YouTube thumbnail. Four. Mark. Four. Leone. I'm Adam. Good luck, everybody.